Well, guys, back again with another Red Eyes TV interview for you. Hope you're doing well. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Henrik, and today we have a return guest on the show. Jonas Nilsson actually has been down in South Africa. A lot of things have been coming up in the press recently about South Africa. Partially for that reason is, of course, some of the documentaries that Lauren Southern has made. She has gotten some international exposure from people like Katie Hopkins, and she's been on Fox, etc. There's some conservative outlets in America, like even Glenn Beck, that are slightly addressing the issue, but are still kind of hesitant, I guess, to really see the severity of the situation, mostly due to the fact that this comes from what they say is like, it only comes from alt-right sources, right, and evil white nationalist sources and stuff like that. So therefore, it's not really legitimate. These are some of the claims that I've heard. But regardless of those accusations against the outlets that are talking about these issues, it's important that we continue in showing the world what actually has happened since the wake of the ANC and since the collapse of apartheid and what's happened to the white population in South Africa. So, Jonas, it's great to be back on the show again. And, of course, we were going to talk about your film project because you have also done a documentary on the Boers, the Boer Project. Very important, I mean, super important documentary. You crowdfunded the movie. You went down there yourself. You met all the people, all the essential places you went to. Tell us a bit about how the movie came together and why you wanted to make it.
Happy to be on the show again, Henrik. Glad to be here. I've been working with this documentary for almost 10 years, one can say, very simplified, because it's 10 years ago when I first traveled down to South Africa and got an awareness of the seriousness of the situation. It wasn't as bad in the country as it is today, but as a Swedish, born and raised in Sweden, we have had a very humanitarian view on society and on how we regard the rest of the world. And we have praised Nelson Mandela as almost something like a saint, and we were promised that these political reforms and the change of government in South Africa would bring equality to the country and make it be something that is similar to Sweden. And when you travel down there today, we see very clearly that the promise that were made, that reality doesn't live up to them. And therefore, I started this Boer project approximately 6 months ago to crowdfund for this documentary to highlight some key aspects that can be questioned of what the motives really were for us to aid the ANC in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, that's right. Many people, I don't think, know about the Swedish connection. Those who are well read on it, they might know, you know, Olof Palme and stuff like that. They know their participation. Of course, this is the Swedish prime minister back in the 80s that was assassinated. But there's a lot of material there, and how would you explain that to the audience a little bit of Sweden's participation in helping to overturn apartheid and why they were involved? Was this just a policy? I mean, we know that the Social Democratic Party was what had been ruling in Sweden for decades at this point, and they were, of course, part of Socialist International as a bigger kind of umbrella organization. And their job has been to, of course, bring these issues of equality and all this, the rainbow nation kind of ideal to places like South Africa. But why do you think they were so involved? Why Sweden, of all countries?
The official reason is because we valued human rights and democratic values higher than the Cold War logic. So Sweden was neutral in one sense during the Cold War, that we stood beside NATO and the Soviet Union. And that put us in a very weird position where we could rely on NATO for our security politics up here in Scandinavia, but at the same time work with the same movement and support them together with the Soviet Union and China. And that's also, in my regard of how I perceive it, that the human rights issues and the democratic values were just key words that we hide behind. And what we actually did was to support an ideology, and that was the ideology of socialism.
Yeah, that's right. And many people, of course, they don't know about the situation in South Africa. Even to this day, they don't understand how severe it is. They don't know how things have happened. They've basically just been told that these evil whites, their rule ended, thankfully, and eventually, of course, it was more equality. But give us just a thumbnail sketch, if you can, Jonas, of what has happened in South Africa. And also what you encountered down there. Was there anything that kind of was a shock to you that you discovered as you were making the film that you didn't know beforehand, that you had researched?
What was happened to this country of South Africa was the enforced politics of socialism. And it just happened in such an escalated way than what we have seen in Sweden due to the group distinction between the whites and blacks. So the aim goal after Nelson Mandela with Thabo Mbeki and then later Jacob Zuma was to ensure to adjust what they would frame as adjust previously disadvantage, and that is on the cost of the so-called previously advantage. So they take from the whites to give to the blacks, and they frame it in the political discourse that the whites have because the blacks have not. The whites have these farms because they have taken it from the blacks, which is, of course, not true.
And now, you know, because Zuma and some of these other people, they're talking about just confiscating white farms without any compensation, just flat out. What has happened, Jonas, and let me know if you disagree with that, but it seems that there was one issue when apartheid was kind of dismantled and there's been an escalation slowly of violence, but politically it has not actually settled with equality. It's been more and more radicalized as time has gone through, and now we have, you know, parties in South Africa like the Economic Freedom Fighters, which are just openly, like, murderous, and you hardly have any international attention to this. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right. And that's because the political reforms that they put in place to adjust this previously injustice in the country have not worked. Because that wasn't the original sin or the original problem. So what they are doing now is to escalate the same reforms in an increased manner and think that they will get the results that they are after, which they obviously will not. And the political situation in the country is that they are trying to driven off the white farmers from their land by neglecting the crime that is directed towards them. And you have political leaders like Julius Malema talking to his followers to say that you shouldn't steal from each other in the township because that would in fact be theft. You should go out to the white farmers because then you wouldn't steal, then you would just take back what is rightfully yours. And that is the baseline for these torturous murders against the white farmers. And that torture that is connected to these farm murders is to send a signal to the next farm owners that it's time for you to sell your farm and move along. And so far the white population is holding their ground in that sense that they are not moving. This is their country, they don't have any other passport, and some of these white farmers have farmed this land for 14, 15 generations, or since the 17th century, and they will not go away. So that's why they will increase this strive to reclaim the land, if you're going to use that word, with political reform. As we see now, the motion of changing the constitution to allow the government to expropriate the land without compensation.
Yeah.
And my guess in this regard is that even though they don't practically do it, this will still escalate the situation for the whites, because the value of the land will drop as a stone in the water. You can't sell it to a fellow white man because no sane white man would buy it because of this reform, because he wouldn't know if the government would take this land that he has purchased without and doesn't even give him compensation for it. And of the same reason, they can't invest in the country, in their own land either, because no bank would grant them a loan for investment because their ownership isn't clear for these farmers. So what the government is doing now is to try to starve the white man out. And if they were to start to actually seize land on a government level, not for this crime wave that we see through farm murders, they would seize land that no one is farming, that a white man owns, but is not being used in a commercial matter. And even white liberals could agree to such an theft of private property with the motivation that if no one uses it can just as well be used by some black that needs it. And amongst white conservatives, they wouldn't be prepared to go out and defend that land either. So the government will try to push as far and hard they can without getting a physical resistance into it.
Mm. Yeah, the situation is just, I mean, it's a nightmare, and there's no one helping them. There's no one coming to their aid, because this is seen as, I guess it's just seen as repaying, right? That this crime of apartheid, of keeping things separate, of basically saying, here's whites, they like it or not, they created the country, they set it up. I mean, we've had prior guests on the show, like Karen Smith and others, and talking about some of the origins of how the South African nation was started, or how the Boers kind of was settled there. And it was basically like, frankly, in many other countries, it was not a permanent settlement that with any other tribes there at that point. And they slowly built things out, and eventually a nation was formed. And then at that form, it just crept slowly into being like a nation where they just had things for their own. It wasn't set up as a nation that said no blacks allowed. It was just, you know, they just did it for themselves. They just did it for their own people. And then eventually, as time progressed, it just became that way because they hadn't, included them in the process of building the nation. But that was seen as a crime, right, Jonas? And so now the repayment of this, of the reclaiming of the land, even the murdering of some of these farmers and the open hostility and violence and stuff is not, focused internationally. One, because they're white, and you can apparently not be a victim if you're white. And two, it's repayment for all the horrible things that they supposedly did towards black people. Am I correct?
Yeah, you are, at least in the narrative, but that's as a truth, that is something I question in this documentary, because the white population of the Boers did not arrive to South Africa as colonizers. They were there to build a new nation, and that is a significant difference from, for instance, the British colonies or the Belgian Congo. And one of the major differences when the time of the colonization was over, those whites actually had an European homeland to return to. The Boers have it not. They founded two Boers nation that after the Anglo-Boer War in the 1899-1902 were lost to England, were immersed into what today is the border of South African Republic. So the Boer has a legitimacy to that country more than that goes beyond who were there first.
Yeah, definitely. So tell us a bit about your trip and some of the things that you kind of encountered. You crowdfunded the project. You got enough money, obviously, to pull it off. You traveled down there. How much time did you spend there? Did you have contacts beforehand, or did you kind of try to, piggyback on one person, and you asked, more as you met more people, and it kind of grew from there? Or did you have like a strict plan of who you wanted to talk to, where you wanted to go? Tell us about the project.
We were down there for 2 weeks, two very intense weeks, working nonstop. And I spent a lot of time in South Africa. I've been traveling back and forth for 10 years. I run business that has imported products from South Africa, so I'm very familiar with the country. I'm familiar with the political situation that the white minority find themselves in. So I already had a clear idea of what I wanted to portray and what kind of problem that I wanted to highlight. So I already, beforehand we went down, I had a very, very tight schedule that I filled with the persons that I wanted to go and meet. And what we did is we have four segments in this documentary. One segment is to give the Boers an historical context to the country, to give them to really show that they have a legitimate claim to the land and to self-determination. And the second segment is of the political reforms of black economic empowerment, which is a law based on ethnicity that forces the white minority out of from the workforce and puts them into poverty, which have a devastating effect on the civic life. And the third segment is if the economic reforms of black economic empowerment that forces the white man into poverty is one could be described as a soft genocide, because it makes it very hard for the white man to invest in its own future, and they live day by day, and therefore it's very hard to raise and create, start a family. Then the third segment is the more hard genocide, which is actually the crime directed against white, and then we focused on the farm murders, which is so torturous in how they do it. It's no theft that takes place in these farms. The black gangs were politically motivated to go into the farm, and with the only object to kill the white person there in such a horrific possible manner that is humanly thinking about.
Yeah, would you say that this is like, are they being stirred up? I think Simon Roche in the interview that you did with him in the movie, he's talking about this too, that there's a kind of, they're whipping them up in the sense of, you know, that the violence almost is justified as a repayment, right?
Yes, yes. The black political leader says that the white man stole your land, go and get it back. You have nothing. You're poor because the white man has taken what was yours. So it's a completely Marxist idea that they follow. And the fourth segment of the documentary is the reply of the white man. And that is where I interview Simon Roche and his organization, the Seedlanders, how they prepare themselves in an organized manner to face this threat if it were to escalate, not just from gangs, but if it were to actually become political, that it would be government forces that would go out and seize lands.
Yeah, state sanctions, sanctioned by the government. And I mean, is there, there's one issue which, as you say, this, the kind of the soft genocide. Well, it's not soft genocide because it actually entails the violence of it. But what I'm saying is that it could be that the criminals and those that go after, you know, the whites, or they attack the farmers and they see this as legitimate. One of the issues is that the government simply just don't do anything about it, right? They don't try to find the criminals. They don't try to go after people. They don't reprimand people if they do find them and stuff like that. Is there stuff like that going on, that there's kind of the whole angle of your movie is that this is, it's a reverse apartheid that's happening, right? The Boer Project movie is like, demonstrates this issue, that in the attempt to try to solve one evil, they're simply creating another, right?
Yeah, what they've done is they have made the white man a secondary citizen. He's not a citizen of their country, and actually this is worse than what was happening during apartheid time, because the apartheid government tried to solve this racial divide that is in Africa by granting homelands to the black tribes, which is something that the whites is actually begging about now. So the white today is actually saying, please treat us like we treated you during apartheid.
Right, yeah.
So we can live in peace.
And they're not even getting that, right? And this, of course, shows some of the problems. I mean, I think after, you know, once South Africa really developed into an economic a successful country, you also had, I've heard many people talk about then, you had a kind of an immigration from many other surrounding African nations pouring down to South Africa, and kind of as a claim of getting access to these resources and the monetary, you know, benefits and whatnot that the country had built up. And I mean, into this, you have to weave somehow. You mean, regardless of how much you talk about the evils of apartheid and that they were, you know, well, they kept them out and they, you know, kept the economic prosperity to themselves or whatever. I mean, when the Boers arrived, there was nothing there. There was nothing there. And so what is it? I mean, I don't know if you're going to do this in the movie. I don't think you do. But what is it that the Boers managed to, out of the dirt of the continent, build something while the others did not? I mean, there is a difference there. And this is my point here, is that's what's creating a lot of problems. There's not a recognition that there are difference in capability. You know, that we hear from the international, you know, liberal world order that everyone is equal, everyone can do the same, and I don't believe that's true. If that was true, then the African nations surrounding South Africa and others would be able to achieve exactly the same that the Boers did not. But clearly they were more industrious, they were more hardworking, they had some, you know, skills and things, advantages, basically, that the other did not. But this is now turning into a punishment of sort, right? Instead of saying, okay, well, let's help each other out then, let's figure this out in some way. Like, when would they be happy if everything that they have built is destroyed and ruined, and that they're gone from the country altogether? I mean, what would solve the situation? It seems insolvable almost when I look at it from the outside. But what do you think after having made the movie and talking with all these people?
The black population in South Africa, and especially the ANC, and in particular the EFF, they doesn't listen to free market principle and respect property rights. They are socialist in their core. And what will happen if nothing is being done to this government is that they will eat up the white man to the last breath, and consume everything that someone else has built up and not be able to maintain it themselves. And to comment what you said about when the whites arrived in the 17th century, they encountered the black tribes coming up north when they were going up north themselves. The black tribes were going south. And during the early 1900s, they were almost as big groups demographically. There were almost 4 million white people, and it was just over 4 million black people. And today it's 3 million white people and 50-60 million black people.
Wow.
So the demographic shift is because of the white man's capacity of feeding a foreign population. We, like, quite literally, we fed up this problem.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, that's nuts. So let's talk a bit about it. So, you know, we have the founding of the nation. We have all these lies, all this misinformation about how things were started and how it was set up, and that somehow it was, people are so shallow in their history. That's my point as well. They're so narrow and just look at a very thin slice of it and see that as the origin point, see that as the reason, see that as everything. But again, this is kind of just a situation that developed, unfortunately. The people that you talk to down there, do they say that, like, okay, if we just get a piece of land, that's enough, we'll be happy with that? Do they want to? Many of them want to form their own nation, or do some of them even talk about trying to get back home to Europe? Or what's their reasoning? Most of them.
Most of the persons that feel committed to the country asks for self-determination and see self-determination as the only way forward in a permanent matter if they're going to survive on this continent for the future generations. The people that want to leave is people who have suffered severely in this country and see no future, regardless of self-determination or not. So I spoke with some crime victims who had their entire family slaughtered, and they are left alone here in this country, and the only way forward for them is to get away with the children they have left.
Yeah, it's a horrible situation, and I mean, some of the most brutal ways that these people are tortured too. It's an immense brutality that which we know nothing about, really. You know, I mean, there's no point in me showing the images of this stuff, and you know, it's just so gruesome and it's so horrible. But the aggravation that this is being, like, denied also by the international media. There's even liberals and leftists in South Africa, white ones, that are, you know, denying that this is just propaganda. This is just, you know, white supremacists that are trying to make something out of nothing. But it's like, Listen, I mean, it's like if this was happened to any other group, any other population, and it has in Africa's history too, in other parts of the world. But if we look at the African continent, there have been genocide. You have in Rwanda, you have within the Hutu and the Tutsi, and all, you know, there's many of these that have been internationally recognized as like problems. Sudan most recently, and many others. Is it just because they're white that no one is talking about this? Is that the issue? It's not. I mean, it's a little bit more spread out. It feels like maybe it's not as you say, it's not like just the government shows up with the military and just murders all the whites. That's not what has happened. No one is arguing that. But it's a slower kind of dragged out targeted ethnocide that's happening.
I think it's 2 points to it. One is that crime is a serious problem in this country, and it's so easy to dismiss this. This form of genocide because of the situation in the rest of Africa. And why Sweden in particular doesn't talk about this problem is because we are somewhat responsible for the situation
right. Yeah. In
South Africa. And in this documentary, I talked to some key people in the Social Democrats that both were very high up in the government. I talked to one Secretary of the State for Olof Palme's government, and then I spoke with the General Secretary of the International Affairs that hold that position today. And they are talking about this problem as it was very just like a failed reform that separates off nothing from bad school politics or whatever, that, okay, we did something that didn't really play out, and maybe now we need to see which other partner we can work with in this country. It's no sense of responsibility whatsoever.
Yeah, let me just show you a little bit here. We don't have to have the volume on, but here's some of the footage from one, for example, like an ANC gala in Sweden back in 1985. You know, Palme was very outspoken. He was very supportive of this. I mean, there's other examples, you know, of Swedes going to America, for example, and lecturing Americans on, you know, segregation and you know, Jim Crow and stuff like that. When we have been a strictly homogenous nation for the longest period, it's easy for us to show up and just say, well, you should do this, you should do that. Mm. And to a certain extent, I don't know if you agree with this, but it's kind of a naivety, and it's a kind of a, well, to a certain extent, just inexperience that I think caused many Swedes to just think that, well, you know, what's the problem, right? We're all equal, and so, you know, we should be able to do this or that, and they just refuse to see the situation. We know that it's politically driven too, obviously. This is a, you know, Socialist International have a, you know, finger in the pie in this whole thing. They were seeing that they could turn South Africa into another socialist country and basically, you know, pin that as one of the allies to the turning the world into some international, you know, global state or whatever. But is it naivety, you know, when you talk with these people in the ex-Swedish government that were behind, you know, that were working with Palme and stuff like that, do you get the sense that they understand what they have done and what the fruits of their labor actually yielded?
Not at all. They're so blindfolded of their own indoctrination, I would say. But it's also like with this old Secretary of State that I interviewed for this documentary, the severeness of his political decision is so serious. He supported Mugabe during the Rhodesian times, together with Soviet Union and China. And starvation and genocide followed in that footstep. And if you start to realize that you played a role in that, and you could actually have done different, then it's easier to blame it on other things than their ideas of socialism, because it's like, all right, they can accept that it didn't work out in Zimbabwe, these socialistic ideas that they are promoting now in South Africa, but they blame it on Mugabe himself, that it was a leadership question, and he literally said that this will not happen in South Africa because Cyril Ramaphosa is not a madman as Mugabe was. But the first thing that Cyril Ramaphosa said when he was elected president during the ANC Congress was that they were going to put in place the exactly same land reform as Mugabe did. That was the main reason to why it was a white genocide in Zimbabwe.
Yeah. Yeah, here's Bengt Söderberg playing that part for the radio audience here right now. And of course, he's talking about this, that he sees it as a you know, a good thing. It was a humanitarian thing. They think that they prevented civil war, I think he said, here too, as well.
Yeah. So they praise himself that due to that we did not only work with regime critique, but we actively worked for a regime change in apartheid, which means that we took an active side with the resistance during apartheid time in the ANC. And through our diplomats at the Swedish embassy in Pretoria, we founded the ANC. We gave them in cash.
That's right.
Through our diplomatic mail that goes under the radar through the South African government or passport. We gave them over 1.5 billion crowns. And in today's value, that's like, it's an extreme amount of money.
Yes.
From a so-called neutral country.
Yeah, he's talking about how they're non-aligned. I don't know if Google translates that properly, but yeah, he's talking about the import, like that they're somehow an objective outside partner and they could do these things. But again, the fact is that their financial support and everything led to the situation that we're seeing right now. And I mean, they directly, funded the ability for these people to rise up and do it. But they just, do you think they really know? Does someone like Bengt really know what happened? Has he really looked into this? Or?
Yeah, he follows the development. And before the interview, he released a book about so-called liberation movements in South Africa and the Africans, and in particular the Portuguese colonies of Mozambique and Rhodesia and South Africa. And to get this interview, he said that I needed to read his book. So I actually read it from from side to side. And
what do you think of it?
It's interesting because he writes it from a personal level, and he has had a quite an exciting life and have been in the mix and have played a major part in the politics in Southern Africa. So in that aspect, it's interesting because he's a man of action, but those actions did not bring any good consequences with him. He really thinks that he's so good-hearted that he actually did good, but what only come from that? What comes to my mind is the quote from Ronald Reagan that if a government official comes and says that he's there for help to help you, it's time to lock and load. I think Travis Söderberg proved that point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, would he be receptive to looking at some of the... Would he look at your movie? Did you ask him that?
I have two more interviews with some very high-profile social democrats. One who have been a minister for 8 years in the two government, and he was also a cabinet secretary for Olof Palme. And before I have performed these interviews with him, and then it's another diplomat from the Social Democrat, I would not prefer to. If I get doxed to them by being part of your show or whatever,
yeah,
I'm happy to be doxed, but I can't send this documentary to Bengt Söderberg before I interviewed his old co-workers.
Sure. Yeah, no, I get that. That's true. But, I mean, the question is also the why. We kind of brushed on this, but this is an interesting point. We're going to take a break here in just a couple of minutes, but as a last issue before we continue in the second part, is it the democratic socialism that caused people like Bengt and others to get involved in a different country? Because you'd think, you know, they have this international think, right? They don't respect the decisions of other nations and saying, you know, okay, you know, again, I'm not saying that you can't help and things like this, but I'm saying this is directly meddling in the political process, really, in other countries, and financing one side and thinking that this is the right thing to do. It has to be the internationalism that the democratic socialism comes with that enables these people to do that. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, it's definitely part of their ideology. So they are acting in accordance to their own self-deception.
So, guys, if you want to check out the movie, It's available for free on YouTube. You know, so it's been very kind enough to get it up there for everybody. And of course, it's crowdfunded, so it's a good opportunity to get a lot of the information out about this. It's called the Boer Project, South Africa, a reversed apartheid, ? A lot of good views so far. It's just been out for, what is it, Jonas, three, four days, something like that?
Yeah, we had the premiere on Saturday, and then we released it on Sunday morning.
Excellent. So it's by Palestra. Is it Palestra Media? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Palestra Media.
Palestra Media. Okay, great. Yeah, so definitely go check it out, folks. Head on over there, support the work that Jonas is doing. You can help to donate to projects like this. So you said you had additional interviews that you want to do. We'll talk more about some of the other stuff that we didn't get to yet in the second segment here. But is there more that you'd like to follow up with in addition to those interviews that you're doing?
Yeah, I got some plans. This was the initial phase of the Boer project. And now with this documentary being finished, we go into a second phase. And these interviews that I will conduct with these old diplomats and the old minister is part of that.
All right, awesome.
And you can read on that on boerproject.com.
Boerproject.com, exactly. I was going to ask you about that, if there's any websites or anything like that. If there's any links that you have to social media or something like that, we'll add those down below. I'll ask you for those later, Jonas. But awesome. Great work on the film. Really excellent. It comes at a good time because there is a lot of international focus on this at this time. We'll talk more about that in a second. But yeah, let's take a short break, guys. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Jonas Nilsson after the break. Right, guys, we're going to wrap up the first part with Jonas Nilsson here in just a little bit. Just want to let you know that if you want to watch the second part or listen to the second part of the show, head on over to redicemembers.com, our members' website. This is the way that you can support us. This is the way you can ensure that we can continue to bring you interviews and shows like this. And also, of course, all the other exclusive video material and shows that we have for you in the members' section. So remember, we don't have any big sponsors. We don't have ads or anything like that. It's up to you guys out there to support us. We can continue to bring you material like this. All right, guys, thank you so much. Join us in the second. We'll continue to talk about the movie and many more things that Europe and the West is facing and how that kind of relates to the situation in South Africa. So an important second part is coming up. We'll talk to you right after the break. Thank you so much for watching.